This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Folks, by now you know that every Tuesday we set aside a segment for the NOLA Coalition participants. These are folks that are in the trenches every day trying to make a difference in our community. As cliche as it sounds, a safe place to live, work, and raise our families. The fact of the matter is, we all want the same things in life. We want to, you know, grow up in a neighborhood that's safe, that's secure, that provides opportunities for everyone to be able to succeed. And I've been the beneficiary of talking to a lot of interesting folks for this long period of time that we've been doing this, and we're going to stay committed to it because we really believe that if we can't be our own best cheerleaders, who will? You know, we're in the competition business. Our community is competing against other communities across the Gulf South in order to be able to enjoy the successes necessary to try and turn the tide on the out-migration of folks and increase the in-migration of folks moving to this area so that we can become a much more viable economy throughout. And today's no different. In fact, we have representatives from an organization that's made a difference in our community for a long time, from the NAACP, and they are the co-chairs of the NAACP Afro-Academic Cultural Technological and Scientific Olympic Sector. Both Julia Battle and Lynette Bates, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. If you would, Julia, let's start with the mission of this program that's been around, I think I was reading, since 1978, and we were one of the inaugural cities. Tell us about it.
Yes. Well, our program is an arm of the National NAACP, and locally our mission is to encourage cultural, social-emotional, and academic achievement in our high school students. And we do that through expert training and mentorship. With our organization, we have over 30 mentors who volunteer to work with students in their area of interest, which includes the sciences, the performing and visual arts, as well as culinary. And those students work all year with the mentors, relationships are formed, and they prepare for local and national competitions in those areas. And this year, we're expanding into many local community performances. The other thing is that we seek to increase student awareness of equity and social justice. So in their projects, they incorporate these goals.
And Lynette, you are the vice president of this, and a lot of this is dedicated to breaking this cycle of poverty that we've talked about for a long, long time. And, you know, I visited juvenile programs across the country, and they didn't have this historic cycle that we have experienced here in New Orleans. And when you visit with some of these young kids, you recognize it right away, and it reveals itself in many, many ways. And I guess that's one of the things that I guess drives you guys to try and make a difference with these 9 through 12 graders, putting them in a position to better succeed in STEM or whatever it may be, right?
Yes, through the NAACP Axo New Orleans, our students have opportunity to compete nationally in the areas of STEM, the performing arts, humanities, the visual arts, business, as well as culinary. In addition to competing nationally, as our students travel to the various cities of the national NAACP conference, our students are exposed to college access opportunities through the college tours, which we take on while we are visiting those particular cities. In addition to throughout the year, we are exposing the students to financial aid, awareness, scholarship awareness, cultural literacy, social justice issues, as well as current events.
And obviously the national NAACP has partnered with a lot of major corporations that have additional programs, actually probably larger than the one that you're running here in New Orleans, and you expose your students to those as well, right?
Exactly. And the wonderful thing about all of this is our students get to see things outside of the city. They get to see other students achieving. They get to form relationships with them and those other programs nationwide. For example, we have several national chefs who have national reputations, television shows, who have decided to mentor some of our culinary students who went to the national competition last year. So you can see that the opportunity is the thing that presents itself to our young people to help break that cycle of poverty and to change thinking.
And I think you guys have been very successful over the past couple of years with a gold medalist in the culinary arts in 2023, and it continued into 2024 with gold medals in classical vocal performance, engineering, culinary arts, traditional dance, modern dance, hospitality, and management.
Absolutely. And the wonderful thing about this program is that it is, we have been revitalized for about 3 years. And in those 3 years, we've had over 450 applicants in those areas. And the gold medalists, when we go to national, it's unusual to come away with more than one or two gold medals, but we have come away with 7 gold medals in 2023 and 9 in 2024. And also we have 2 students who have been awarded $10,000 scholarships for their writing, young ladies, on how they will impact the future. So Axo has been doing very well on the national scale. And our students are really a third of the national competitors in the national program. So Axo has done very, very well.
Yeah, and obviously you guys have opened doors for these students too of our own cultural experiences within the city. A lot of times we spend a lot of time talking about exposing our kids to other areas around the country. And a lot of times we just don't look inward, right? We don't look at the obvious right before us where we're not taking advantage of all that we have to offer here locally.
Exactly. Lynette, would you like to speak to that? I don't want to do all the talking. Go ahead.
Well, just for example, this past weekend, one of the local neighborhood organizations sponsored a neighborhood fair, and our students from New Orleans Axo were the featured performers during that particular time period. So at an early age, the students are given the opportunity to actually lend themselves to the environment of serving as an artist in the various areas of STEM, science, technology, engineering, arts, and mathematics.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
And we have another upcoming event on Thursday evening with a partnership with Dillard University, where some of our spoken word students are reading the poems of incarcerated students. And they are also speaking to, in that area of social justice, with young people being incarcerated and themes of hope and all of those things for the future. So we have a lot of local things and are taking advantage of our local culture.
So, Julia, let's talk a little.
Go ahead,
Lynette. I'm sorry.
I'm so sorry. Just was going to point out the fact that the University of New Orleans serves as the host to the local competition in partnership with the music department. And then we have such great mentors such as Stephen Foster, who's a local music educator. We have Lula Elzey, who has her own dance theater. We have Sharon Martin, which most people know as the artist and the entertainer. We've got Diva, the STEM diva, Trevor Brown, as well as partnership with Dookie Chase in Chapter 4. And then we have the University of New Orleans partnering with us through hospitality as well under the leadership of the chair of the department, Yvette Green.
Absolutely. And it's great that we have these partnerships with higher ed, for sure. So I want to get to these dates because there's some registration dates that y'all have available if folks are interested, and there's other program dates that we need to get to real quick. So either Julia or Lynette, if y'all would go through that so we can, if anybody has an interest in registering their student in any of these areas of interest, this is how you would go about doing it.
Absolutely. Yes. So our sign-up dates are open right now, and we have sent out notifications of that to all the schools through email. October 1st was the opening date to sign up, and if you'd like to sign up for the program, you can go to our website, axelneworleans.org/upcoming-events, and it will route you to an online sign-up form. And the deadline for signing up for this year's program is December 15th. And so that would be the most efficient way to sign up. And Lynette, did you have something else as well?
I think you've pretty much covered everything, in addition to the fact that AXO New Orleans is a wonderful leadership development program for the students of the greater New Orleans area.
And the competition.
Yes, and we,
Go ahead,
Newell. I'm sorry.
No, please,
I was just going to talk about the competition as well.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. So we have our local competition on April 19th, and that's kind of a culminating local event in which all of our students who've been preparing come to University of New Orleans to compete. And those students can win gold, silver, or bronze medals, and the gold medalists will go to national. Then on June 7th, we have our talent extravaganza and award show at University of New Orleans, and those students with gold, bronze, and silver medals come to perform in a talent extravaganza. And then the gold medalists go to compete again July 12th through 16th in Charlotte, North Carolina.
And that's the national competition, right? So I want to make sure that
Correct.
We got the website right. It's the letter ACTSONewOrleans.org, right?
Let me help you with that. It's a little different. It's ACTSSONewOrleans.org.
Okay. ACTSSONewOrleans.org if folks are interested. Julia, final thoughts?
Final thoughts is that this program has grown so very quickly in the past 3 years. It is wonderful that there is a need for this program here in the city, and the positive contributions of our local artists, of our local teachers, and particularly our parents and students, it's just uplifting that this is here in the city of New Orleans and beyond. And we are very, very confident that our students are going to continue to do well, be leaders, and come back and help their city of New Orleans to move forward.
Well, ladies, thank you so much for joining us today. We truly appreciate it. Keep up the great work. You guys are difference makers, and have a great week.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, folks, that's Lynette Bates, Vice President, NAACP AXO, as well as Julia Battle, co-chair of the NAACP AXO. We will be right back, 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. When we return, we will visit with Ted Rossman, senior industry analyst, bankrate.com. We're going to talk about some polling results about what people are willing to share with others and what they're not. And have you lent money to family members, friends, or otherwise? And was it a positive or a negative experience? We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Ted Rossman, senior industry analyst, Bankrate.com. Ted, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Ted, you guys recently conducted a survey about what people are willing to talk about and feel a level of comfort in talking about, and also what they're very uncomfortable to talk about. And the results were really interesting to me. Tell us about it.
People are very uncomfortable discussing money matters. In fact, among the things we asked about, people are least comfortable discussing their bank account balances. And we're talking about with your family and close friends here. So bank account balances were the most taboo. Your love life was second. Credit card debt was third. So money was really well represented in that top three. Another way to look at it is that some of the things people were more comfortable talking about would be potentially sensitive topics like religion, politics, your weight. People would rather talk about that stuff than how much credit card debt they have.
I was surprised about political views as well, because that, you know, it's a very toxic environment today, right?
It is very surprising. It goes to show how personal money is for people. And, you know, I'm not saying you need to tell everybody all of your financial details, but especially people close to you, you know, your spouse, for example. We found that more than 4 in 10 people who are married or living with a romantic partner have kept or are keeping financial secrets from that person. And that includes secret debt, secret bank accounts, secret spending. That sort of thing is harmful to a relationship. We need to get better about talking about money. And with your friends, too. I mean, sometimes there can be friction if people have very different budgets and someone's suggesting expensive restaurants or trips or events, and that maybe doesn't mesh with the rest of the group. Holiday gifts. You know, part of the reason we do this survey around this time of year is because the holidays are coming up, and that can be an occasion for some awkward money conversations and gift-giving situations. For all of these reasons, I think it's better to get more open about discussing money.
Yeah, I mean, there's... You know, not really. I think what people will find is that there are probably more similarities amongst their close friends and family as it relates to their financial situation, right?
That brings up another good example with the holidays, which is sometimes it's hard to be the first one to speak up. But if money's tight this year, maybe you suggest to your family, could we only buy for the kids this year? Or could we pick a name out of a hat and buy for one adult rather than the whole extended clan? You know, these are some things that can get some heads nodding in agreement, that, you know, others may be feeling the same way. Half of credit card holders carry debt from month to month. The average credit card charges almost 21%. A lot of people are dealing with these kind of financial challenges. Same thing with your friend group. You know, when it comes to going out to expensive restaurants and other occasions. You know, sometimes that doesn't fit in the budget. Maybe you could suggest something else instead. We asked about regifting. Only 1 in 3 think regifting is appropriate. I was surprised by that. I mean, yeah, you want to be careful about not giving it back to the person who gave it to you, but I actually think regifting could be a suitable holiday saving strategy.
No, absolutely. I mean, it's, you know, I mean, it's the intention of the gift giver, right? I mean, and but sometimes we get it wrong. My wife points that out to me all the time.
Unused gift cards are an example of this. Like, we recently did a study. We found almost half of Americans have unused gift cards. And among those people, the average amount is $244. I think somebody would be none the wiser if you passed on a gift card, or you could buy merchandise using the card, and that's the holiday gift. The point here is finding ways to save, because money is tight. You know, inflation's still a big deal for people. Interest rates are still high. Now, the average holiday expense is $900, according to the National Retail Federation. So if you have $244 on average in gift cards just lying around, I say use them.
Ted, if we would, let's cover one thing that a lot of folks don't recognize. I mean, when you have this credit card debt and there's a minimum payment that's indicated on the statement that comes every month, what does that reflect, that minimum payment?
The typical formula is only 1% of the balance plus interest. And there's usually a floor. Maybe it can't go lower than $35 or something like that. But really, the point here is that minimum payments can keep you in debt for a really long time. Like, the average credit card balance, according to TransUnion, is about $6,300. The average interest rate is just shy of 21%. So if you use that scenario and you make minimum payments towards the average debt at the average rate, you're going to be in debt for about 18 years, and you're going to end up paying more than $9,000 in interest, plus that $6,300 that you charged in the first place. That's the danger of minimum payments. You know, it may keep you current in the eyes of the card issuer and the credit bureaus, but it's not enough. We'd love to see you pay in full every month. I realize that's not always possible. But then, you know, maybe get a 0% balance transfer card. Pause that interest clock for 21 months with a card like the Citi Simplicity or the Wells Fargo Reflect. Work with a reputable nonprofit credit counselor like Money Management International to knock your debt down. Take on a side hustle. Sell stuff you don't need. It's important to pull these different levers to lower that credit card debt burden.
A lot of folks have bank balances. They're probably earning less than 4% on their money. When you figure out the difference, I mean, obviously you need to have a little bit of a rainy day fund, right? And you guys have a recommendation along those lines. But if you have dollars available, it just kind of makes sense to pay the balance down, right?
Yes. I mean, think of it as a guaranteed risk-free, tax-free return of whatever your interest rate is. Most credit cards are in the 20%+ range. I mean, we see some store cards as high as about 36%. So yes, it's important to have the rainy day fund, and you know, you want to be saving and investing for retirement. And I realize that life is expensive and people say, well, I can't do it all. For a lot of people, the best answer is some of all the above. You know, maybe you're steadily building your emergency fund, but at the same time, you're paying down credit card debt. Sometimes there's a risk to over-saving or investing for the future. You know, not that I really would ever want to discourage that, but what I'm saying is, you know, if you're putting 15% of your salary into your retirement plan, but you're paying 25 or 30% on your credit cards, you might be a little upside down on that. Maybe it makes sense to contribute just enough to the 401k for the employer match, and then you put the additional funds towards the credit card debt, and then hopefully once you knock that out, then you can go back to turbocharging your investments. You know, same thing with savings. We want to have the rainy day fund, but you know, you have to balance that with expensive debt like credit card debt. Credit card debt is a lot more expensive and a lot more harmful than something like student loans or mortgages. I mean, just the rates are so much higher on credit card debt, and it's not doing anything for you. It's not building equity like a home. It's not furthering your earning power like a college education. Credit card debt is one that we want to knock out as soon as possible.
And you have to be disciplined, right? I was in a store not too long ago. There was a special offer if you use the store credit card and you apply for it. They give you 10% off, right, up to a certain amount. And I think in this case, it was up to $2,000. The purchase that I made was about $1,200. I took advantage of it, filled out the card. But I looked at the rate. The rate was like 29%. And, you know, so the first statement I got, I paid it off. But I got the benefit of the 10% discount on the goods. So it made sense.
It's a smart strategy. Half of credit card holders typically pay in full every month. And for them, life is great. They get rewards, they get buyer protections, convenience. It's the other half that we worry about, those who are carrying debt, often for a long period of time. 6 in 10 people with credit card debt have had it for at least a year. And those store cards have especially high interest rates, in part because they're easier to get, but because they're not as selective about credit quality, they really bump those rates up. Whereas the average for all cards is about 21%, the average for store cards is about 30. And you really do need to be careful with that, especially this holiday season. You may be offered one of these at the checkout counter. It only makes sense if you can pay in full and avoid these high interest rates.
Absolutely. Now, one of the other things that you guys talk about in your most recent publication is when you offer financial support to a family member or a friend, what folks' experience has been when they do that. Tell us about the results.
We found that half of Americans have lent money to family and friends or paid a group bill with the expectation of being paid back. And then among that group, 55% had something bad happen at least once. I mean, to be fair, it's not every time, but still, it only takes being stiffed once to make a big difference. 42% of these people lost money. 24% said the relationship was harmed. 9% had damage to their credit score. We really want to go into this with eyes wide open that it might not work out. And that's actually part of the advice. There's a temptation to say, well, just don't do it. You know, but I know that people want to be helpful. So if you're going to be helpful, maybe treat it like a gift rather than a loan and don't necessarily expect the money back. Or like they say on the airplane, put your oxygen mask on before helping others. Don't give so much help that it's harming your own financial security. I feel like any assistance you give, you have to be okay with not getting it back.
We're typically a very giving, you know, people here in the United States. So it kind of runs counter to a little bit of our psyche, but you have to put that in check because you really don't want to harm yourself financially.
And that's where it can come full circle. You know, you think about maybe parents of adult children offering assistance, but then if that leaves them unprepared for retirement, are they then going to come right back and ask the kids for a loan or support? I mean, maybe, and for some families, maybe that works. I do, though, wonder if there are other ways people could help. You know, could you offer advice or connections or, you know, in the case of that parent and adult child example, maybe you give assistance up to a certain point. You know, maybe the kid lives with you for the next 6 months or the next year, but you're working together on a plan for independence, you know, that you're trying to bank some of that savings and build that apartment fund or, you know, maybe there's some skin in the game with respect to the adult child contributing to household bills. Maybe the parent helps with some things but not others, and you're kind of gradually weaning them off the assistance. I feel like part of a parent's duty is to set their kids up for independence. So I do think there is such a thing as too much help if it crosses over into enabling bad habits. It's a tricky situation, though, because, you know, there's a fine line between being empathetic and nice and helpful versus, you know, maybe going a little too far. So everybody's line is going to be a little bit different. But I feel like the big thing is don't lend more than you can afford to lose and try not to hurt the relationship. You know, maybe it makes sense to just treat it like a gift and not necessarily expect it back or have it hanging over you.
Life rings aren't always a life ring, right? I mean, it depends on the individual circumstances.
there are some times that it can contribute to a failure to launch, and you know, maybe you're not encouraging your child or whomever we're talking about to be independent enough. So yeah, it's tricky. I mean, I know life's expensive for everybody, and but that's true on both sides of it, you know, because the person asking for the loan needs help, but the person giving the support may not always be in the best situation themselves. So, you know, it can also help maybe to get it in writing. I mean, not that you're going to sue your friend or family member, but, you know, maybe to at least clarify expectations that, you know, if you do want to do this and if you do hope to get paid back, maybe you're just very clear about those circumstances. Sometimes you hear like, oh, wait, you were expecting that money back? I mean, yeah, I was hoping to get that back. So it makes sense to just be as clear as you can. And it brings us back to the earlier point, too, just about being more comfortable talking about money in general, talking about it with your spouse so that you're not squirreling money away in secret or spending in secret. It helps to bring some of these conversations into the light. One bright spot is that Gen Zers seem more open about this than older adults, and especially on the issue of salary transparency. We are seeing some progress there.
That's good to hear. Let me ask you something, Ted. I've always been a bird in the hand is better than two in the bush kind of person, right? Mm-hmm. For folks that are thinking about refinancing maybe a home or their debt or whatever, and it absolutely makes sense right now, but there's financial information that's out there that's saying that rates are going to get cut again and, you know, possibly this and possibly that. What is y'all's best advice? Because I'm kind of like, those conditions are subject to change. And we've seen that just recently, right, with the most recent jobs report. Now there's uncertainty whether or not we'll get 50 basis point cut in the reserve, you know, Federal Reserve, or it'll be a 25 basis point. It seems to me that if it makes sense for you right now and it's not a guaranteed thing that's going to happen, you might want to think twice about waiting and just go ahead and you know, get it done. Your thoughts?
Yeah, it's a good question. Yeah, mortgage rates have already fallen quite a bit, and this has been a real bright spot of late. I know the Fed just started cutting rates, but a lot of the move in mortgage rates came in advance because they track long-term treasuries and investors have been kind of reading these tea leaves that rates are going to come down. So a year ago, the average 30-year fixed mortgage rate hit 8% for the first time in more than 20 years. And now it's down to 6.2. So to your point about the bird in the hand, I mean, yeah, if you bought in the past couple of years and your rate was in the sevens or eights and now you can get one around six, that is guaranteed savings. And if rates fall further, you could always refinance again. I mean, I know there are transaction costs. But like I said, a lot of the drop has already been priced in. Many experts believe that a year from now, the average 30-year fixed rate mortgage could be somewhere in the mid to upper fives. So a little bit lower than it is now, but not dramatically lower. I mean, the big drop, the almost 2-point drop, we've really already seen since last fall. And same thing for prospective buyers. I mean, your dollar does stretch much further at 6% than it did at 8%. But just make sure you're not overextending. You know, sometimes people say that they're going to stretch and get into the house now, and then they're just going to, you know, refinance when rates fall. Just be a little careful about that, because what if rates don't fall as we hope and expect? Or what if you can't refinance for some reason? It's important to be able to afford the here and now. And if rates drop, I would treat that like a bonus, not a baseline expectation.
Absolutely. You know, sometimes you engage in risky strategies and that's what it's all about, is high risk. And it, you know, and with that, you know, you never know what the return's going to be for certain. Ted Rossman, as always, we really appreciate all the work that Bankrate does and you guys coming on and sharing it with us. And we hope that you have a great week. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
That's Ted Rossman, Senior Industry Analyst at Bankrate.com. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Things are still not going well at the southern border. A lot of questions being asked about some of the policies that have been implemented by the Biden-Harris administration, and they continue to basically avoid answering any of the questions. Actually, on a most recent interview with Bill Whitaker, he asked Vice President Harris about her visit to the southern border and the fact that she embraced President Biden's recent crackdown on asylum seekers, the most asylum seekers of any administration in the history of the country, over a million, if my memory serves me correct, and talks about how she's going to be much more proactive and aggressive as it relates to illegal immigration. She was reminded by Bill Whitaker, and I quote, "But there was a historic flood of undocumented immigrants coming across the border the first 3 years of your administration. As a matter of fact, arrivals quadrupled from the last year of President Trump. Was it a mistake to loosen the immigration policies as much as you did?" And she went on to say that it's a longstanding problem. Solutions are at hand. And from day one, literally, we have been offering solutions. And he goes on to say, "Well, I was asking, was it a mistake to allow the flood to happen in the first place? I think the policies that we have been proposing are about fixing a problem, not promoting a problem, okay? But the numbers quadrupled," he said. And she says, "and the numbers today," he says, "under your watch, because of what we've done," she says, "we have cut the flow of illegal immigration by half." But should you have done that, the flow, and she talks about the flow of fentanyl, she refuses to answer the question of they have been compelled to address this situation because they allowed it in the first 2 to 3 years of the administration to get as bad as it has been. And there have been eye-popping numbers of folks crossing the border, and they just don't know how to deal with it. In fact, the big parole program that they talked about for Cubans, Haitians, Nicaraguans, and Venezuelans, they've now said that they're not going to extend it. So those that are in this country that don't have a avenue to become a citizen, they are now deportable. So what we've done is we've paroled people in the promise that there's going to be a path to citizenship, knowing full well there was no path to citizenship. They don't have a path, so now they're deportable. And at the same time, they are criticizing the Trump administration in the past and his candidacy for talking about having a plan relative to deportation. It's amazing how they want it both ways. We'll be right back after the break, folks. Stay with us. Folks, when we come back after the top of the hour news break, we'll visit with the Louisiana Secretary of State, Nancy Landry, about what you can expect when you walk into polling places for the upcoming election. And in the back half of the next hour, we'll visit with J. Celeste Lay, the professor, Department of Political Science at Tulane University, about Donald Trump's proposal to eliminate the Department of Education.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.